You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
I have no patience at a food line. Any line, for that matter. Oh, I have to work on my patience. At McDonald's, if there's a long line, I jump behind the counter, I work the fries, I get it moving. I've been employee of the week twice, I don't even work there. But I take the parking space, and I love having my picture up. Watch people at McDonald's. They decide what they want when they get to the front of the line. That makes me crazy. What were you doing in line? Your tax returns? I knew what I wanted before I parked the car. People stare at a McDonald's menu. It's McDonald's. The same stuff since you were 6 years old. Ask me anything. Left to right, right to left. What do you want to know? Get out of the line! People are reading the menu. They have pictures of the food. Just point.
Get out of the line.
Starbucks is another one. I like Starbucks. They have a good product. They're polite. They're too slow. I have to have coffee in the morning or I can't talk. My first cup can't be Starbucks. I'd be dead by the time I got to the front of that line. You got coffee back there? Yeah, well, you should drink some of that so you'll move it. I have to stop at Dunkin' Donuts and get coffee to stand in line for coffee. And people are staring like, I should have done that. KFC, I don't do well in KFC lines because people stare at that menu. It's KFC. They have chicken. You know what else they got? They got chicken. You want chicken or chicken? Get out of the line. Movie theater concession line. People staring at that menu. They got popcorn, candy, soda. That's what they got. What are you looking for? Buffalo wings, prime rib? They don't got that. Get out of the line. Am I the only person in this line that has a movie to catch? That's what I would like to know. The supermarket, I don't do well either. Oh, good, she has coupons.
Waiting. Waiting. I don't like to wait. You don't like to wait. We all hate to wait, right? One of the greatest songwriters of our time, I'm not sure if you guys were in here whenever we were doing the songs before we started, but Tom Petty wrote a song, right? The waiting is the hardest part. Can we all agree with that? How much do we hate to wait? Some of the richest people in our country or in this world are those that develop things that shortened our time that we have to wait. Think about it. We have the railroad. You know, that before we had a railroad, it would take months to go across the country. The railroad we can attribute to people like Gould and Vanderbilt and those kind of people. The automobile, big improvement. We can thank Henry Ford and Chevy Chase for things like that. The internet, we all know that Al Gore invented the internet. That really made things shorter amount of time, so we don't have to wait. The microwave, we can go on and on. The fast food, Velcro, Google, Amazon two-day shipping, Netflix. I mean, all those things are so that we don't have to wait. Netflix is like one of the greatest things ever. Because I used to, you know, you had to watch your show, you know, back whenever I was a kid, and then you had to wait for a whole week to see the next episode. Now you just click continue, you know. So Netflix. We all hate to wait. So today, we're going to talk about patience. Did you know that God has a sense of humor? I mean, He created us, so He's got to have that sense of humor, right? But here are some examples of how I know that God has a sense of humor. Number one is the platypus. You ever think about the platypus? It's a creature that's a little bit mammal because it produces milk and it's furry. It's a little bit reptile because it lays eggs. And it actually can, and it has venom. It can be released from its hind legs. I don't know if you can do that. And it's a little bit like a bird because, you know, again, it lays eggs and it has a bill like a duck and it has webbed feet. Interesting animal. This is another reason why I know that God has a sense of humor. Go ahead and read that. Yep. And when God was planning the world, right? There we got that one now? Okay. When God was planning the world, way back before the earth was even created, and he was planning how this thing was going to go out, he decided that on this day he was going to have Scott Snook teach on patience. And I'm not sure if you know how funny that is, but that's pretty funny. For any of you that know me, I am not exactly known for my patience. It's not something that I'm really proud of. But I think today that I am teaching on patience so that I can learn about patience. You guys are just along for the ride. You guys are just going to be listening to what I have learned over the last few weeks. So this isn't really about you. This is God talking directly to me. And I have very specific examples, even in the last week or two, that I know that God's saying, okay, you've been studying this, now let's see you put it into practice. Because he put me into some situations that took an awful lot of patience. Just to let you know, give you an example about how impatient I can be. So I like to listen to talk radio. I like listening to Sean Hannity and Mark Levin and those guys. And there used to be an FM station that carried those guys. But I would say like a year, maybe 2 years ago, they took it off the FM station. The only place I could find it was on an AM station. Now, I don't know how many people listen to AM stations anymore, but you can go past a tree and lose signal, you know, for 2 minutes, it seems like. It's very skittish. And so that's the only choice I had was to listen to AM radio. And Sean Hannity comes on at like 3:05. And at 3:20, he goes into a commercial. And then, you know, for another 10 minutes is commercials. Then it comes on for another couple of minutes. And so in other words, if I want to listen to anything on my ride home from work, I had to leave work exactly at 3:05. And then hopefully I'm not going past too many things that interfere with the signal. Now, I get off. Follow with me here, and I'll think about where I'm at. I'm on 322. I'm heading back towards Lewistown. I work in Reedsville, Milroy area. So I'm on 322, and I get off at the Walnut Street exit. You know where the Twin Kiss is? You guys know where that's at? So I get off there, and I turn left. I go past Twin Kiss, and I go around. I go underneath the bridge, and there's a red light right there. You guys know where I'm talking about? Right in that section, the radio station, the AM station, goes off. So there's about a quarter of a mile that is nothing but static on the radio. So I hate that section. And inevitably, whenever I got to that red light, there'd be some jack wagon that has to turn left that all the traffic's coming the other way. He can't turn left. So we're sitting there. We're sitting there. And this happens every single day, it seems like. And in my mind, I know that person that's turning left is doing it because he hates me. Because I cannot listen. I am losing the few precious minutes of listening to this talk radio that I have sitting here because somebody has to turn left. Why do you have to turn left? That's ridiculous. Why don't you just go around, go a different way? There's no reason you have to turn left at that light. That's how impatient I can be. So today, we're going to talk about patience. What's your definition of patience? Have you ever thought about that? How do you define patience? Go ahead. Give me something. Willing to wait. Anybody else got anything better? So let's see the first definition here. Wait without complaint is what I came up with. Okay? Now, this is a real good definition of patience, because that means if we were, say, at a tailgating at a Penn State game, we were tailgating waiting for the game, right? We're having a good time, eating out on the grill or whatever we do on our tailgating, and we're waiting for the game. Do we consider ourselves as being patient in that kind of situation because we're waiting for the game without complaint? No, not really. We're actually having fun, right? So here's a better definition. Endure discomfort without complaint. Okay, so there's got to be some kind of discomfort involved with the waiting. Enduring, you know, means waiting. So you're waiting with discomfort without complaint. So then I looked up what the dictionary definition of patience was, and this is what it came out to be. Able to accept or tolerate delays, problems, or suffering without becoming annoyed, anxious, or upset. That is a tough definition, because let me tell you, we all have problems with patience if we're going by this definition. Because that's not saying just don't without complaint, without verbally complaining about something. This is saying able to tolerate delays, problems, suffering without becoming annoyed, anxious, or upset. Tough, tough definition. Now, I told myself I was going to follow my notes this time, because I have a tendency to go on and then I get completely lost where I'm at here. So let me find where I'm at here. Okay. Now, with that kind of a definition, we could say that patience actually involves other virtues, such as self-control, which I think Kirk talked about last week. Humility, generosity, those things have to be involved in order for us to be able to meet this kind of criteria here for patience. You could basically say patience is the super fruit of all the fruits, because we have a lot of different things involved going on here. Now let's stop here to think about what is not patience. Let's say you're stuck in a traffic jam. You have no option, there's no exits to go off, and you can't turn around. You're just sitting there waiting in the traffic jam. Are you being patient? No, because you are not tolerating or accepting it if you have no choice. You have no choice, so you can't say that I'm accepting it or tolerating it like the definition says. Another reason why it's not patience is if you get annoyed at all sitting in that traffic jam, then you don't meet the definition of patience from the dictionary point of view. Let's say you're going down the interstate at 75. It's only 5 over the speed limit. That's about what I give, about 5 over. And you're in the passing lane, and once again, there's some jackwagon that decides he's going to pass, or maybe it's a truck, because trucks do this all the time, but they're going to pass another truck, but they're going to go about 0.1 miles an hour faster than the other truck, right? So you are behind them, and then you know, the traffic is backing up behind you because this guy, as you can tell, one of the situations I had in these past couple weeks is I had an 8-hour drive down to visit my daughter. I had one dog sitting in this seat, had another dog sitting in the back seat, my wife is sitting in the middle, and I had a 1-year-old granddaughter for 8 hours. Yeah, it dawned on me about halfway through that, yeah, I think God's teaching me how to have some patience here. And then you get these guys that are driving on the road like this. I mean, for some reason, I talked to Jason about this, driving is probably the worst area for me in patience. I'm not sure about you guys, but that drives me crazy, some of our drivers out there. So maybe during this, if you're one of those drivers, we can help you along and teach you some lessons, you know, about good driving habits here, hopefully. Just because you are quietly waiting to do something or waiting for something to happen does not mean you are being patient. I thought I came across this next phrase or this next statement. I think it's pretty deep. Patience is only needed when there is a reason not to wait. Okay? So let's say, for example, you're out with friends, you're at a restaurant, and you're just having a good time, you're talking, and the meal takes an hour to come. That's usually pretty extravagant, but you're sitting there having a good time socializing with your friends. No big deal. There's not a reason to not wait. You're not in a hurry. You know, that's not patience. Let's say that you had a movie that starts in 45 minutes and it took an hour for your meal to get there. Now there's a reason to not wait. Now you have to exhibit some patience, right? So I'm just trying to set up how just waiting on something is not good enough to have patience. There has to be a reason to not wait. So here's our motto. Here's something we're going to be exploring today, we're going to be discovering today. When the fruit of patience is produced, it reveals our selfishness. You may not be able to see or link that together yet, but hopefully that's what we're going to get to later on. Now we're going to look at some biblical examples of some pretty prominent Bible figures and how they dealt with patience or impatience. So I titled this The Impatient Imp. If you never know what an imp was, that's an imp right there. Or my definition of an imp. So let's start with Abraham, or Abram. The impossible impediment. All right. Maybe most of you know this story. We're going to go through it relatively quick fashion, but go ahead to the next one there. Okay, so the word of the Lord came to Abram. This was before his name changed to Abraham. In a vision saying, "Do not fear. I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward." But Abram said, "Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I am childless and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus?" Abram said, "Since you have not given me any children, my heir is a servant born in my house." This is a pretty big deal. Abraham was a pretty rich dude, and he had no son of his own. So whenever he died, the heir was going to go to whatever the son was living in his household, which is a servant. Let's go to the next one. The word of the Lord came to him. Now, you guys, I kind of glossed over that in the first section there, but God is talking to Abram here. This is pretty cool stuff. He's talking to him in a vision, but he's still talking to him. And so it's like a communication, right? The Lord says, "This, you know, I'm your reward, you know." And Abram's like, "Well, what are you giving me? Because I still don't have a son." And the Lord came back and said, "This man will not be your heir, this servant, but a son that is from your own body will be your heir." He brought him outside and said, "Look up toward heaven and count the stars. If you're able to count them, look at the stars if you're able to count them." And he said to him, "So will your descendants be." You're going to have that many descendants. Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. Abraham believed what God was telling him. Now, he's talking to God, and when God tells you something, I'd probably believe it. If I heard direct voice or directly from God, I think I would believe it too. What happens? Let's go on. By the way, we can turn on these lights just in case anybody wants to follow along. We're in Genesis here. Now Sarai, or who will become later as Sarah, which is Abram's wife, had borne him no children. And she had a maidservant, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. So Sarah said to Abram, "The Lord has prevented me from having children. Please go into my maid. It may be that I will obtain children through her." What's Abram do? He listened to Sarai. He just had a conversation with God, and now he's been convinced by his wife to do it a different way. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram called the son she bore Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram. Abraham was 86. And we learned out later, his wife is a year younger. His wife was 85 when this happened. Now, we have a tendency to look back at our Bible stories, and we have an easy time criticizing the people that are being talked about because of what they did. "I would have never done that." God was talking to him. How could he not believe him? Why would he immediately turn around and go against what God was saying and do it his own way, right? You got to remember, he was 86 when this happened. And Sarah was 85. A little bit beyond childbearing years, right? Even for back in that day. He went on to have Isaac whenever he was 100 years old and Sarah was 99. He had to wait another 14 years after this. So we can say Abram wasn't very patient, but how patient would we be when you're that old and then you have to wait another 14 years even more before you get what God had promised you? What are the results of this impatience of Abraham? Ishmael is kind of like where the whole Arab descendants, or he was the father of like the Arab world. And the Arabs and the Israelis don't get along very good, do they? To this day, we see stuff happening over there. To this day, there's a constant battle between those two groups. And it started right here with Ishmael, and then later Isaac. And it started with Abraham not being patient. Okay, next slide. Now, I owe most, just between you and me and the whole world that's listening to this, I owe most entitled this The Impossible Impotence, but I thought Sean might edit that out. And besides, the older I get, it's not really that funny anymore. So, we're going to go to the next one. Saul impulsively improvised. Saul was the first king of the Jews. Remember that? Remember that? He was before David. The Israelites wanted a king. God was their king up to that point. The Israelites wanted a real king, and they got Saul. Let's jump in here and see what Saul did. Now, Saul was pretty much early in his kingship here. Whenever we get to this point where it says, now, this is Samuel, who is a prophet of God, talking to Saul right after he basically got anointed and he was king. This is Samuel giving instructions to Saul, saying, now, go down to Gilgal, and I will follow. I'll come down and join you in worship by sacrificing burnt offerings and peace offerings. Wait 7 days, then I'll come and tell you what to do next. Pretty simple instructions. Get down to this place. Wait 7 days. I'm going to come down. I'm going to offer burnt offerings and peace offerings for you, and then I'll tell you what you're supposed to do next. Okay? Now, we're jumping ahead a little bit, a couple chapters. Let me set it up here a little bit. Of course, the Israelites are always in battle against the Philistines. The Philistines are like their arch enemy. And there was some stuff going on here where Saul's son, Jonathan, killed a leader of the Philistines. They called him the governor in one of the verses I read. This got the Philistines all up in arms, and they were ready to go to war. And they brought in everybody. Some of the verses that are previous to this say that the number of people that the Philistines brought were like the number of sands at the seashore. I mean, there were a lot of them. And the Israelites are starting to freak out. So here's where we're at. When the Israelites saw that they were way outnumbered and in deep trouble, they ran for cover, hiding in caves and pits, ravines and brambles and cisterns, wherever. They retreated across the Jordan River, going AWOL. Refugees fleeing to the country of Gad and Gilead. But Saul held his ground in Gilgal, his soldiers still with him, but scared to death. He's still waiting these 7 days, is what he's waiting for, right? He waited 7 days, the time set up by Samuel. Samuel failed to show up at Gilgal, and the soldiers were slipping away right and left. Now you gotta put yourself in that situation. Okay, there are hundreds of thousands of the enemy around you. They're way outnumbering you. You're waiting for Samuel. You need God to help you in this battle, or you are done. Right? You have to give God these offerings. You have to provide these offerings to God, or you're going to be in big trouble. Samuel didn't show up when he was supposed to. So Saul took charge. Bring me the burnt offerings and the peace offerings. He went ahead and sacrificed the burnt offering. No sooner had he done it than Samuel showed up. And Saul greeted him. I can just see Saul, hey, Samuel, how you doing? Samuel said, "What on earth are you doing?" Saul answered, "When I saw I was losing my army from under me, and that you hadn't come when you said you would, and that the Philistines were poised at Michmash, I said, 'The Philistines are about to come down on me in Gilgal, and I haven't yet come before God asking for help.' So I took things into my own hands and sacrificed the burnt offering. I decided this is what I had to do. I became impatient for you." Right? "That was a fool thing to do," Samuel said to Saul. "If you had kept the appointment that your God commanded, by now God would have set a firm and lasting foundation on your kingly rule over Israel. As it is, your kingly rule is already falling to pieces. God is out looking for your replacement right now. This time, He will do the choosing. When He finds him, He'll appoint him leader of his people, and all because you didn't keep your appointment with God." What was the result of Saul's impatience? He lost his kingship for him and his descendants. And I think it's a good example of, along with Abram, we're going to look at one more, but our impatience has results. Maybe not to the extent of this, but our impatience will have results one way or the other. Let's look at one more. Job. Impressive or impious? Because impious, that's a pretty good word. I had to look up words that begin with IMP, and I found that one. I even have written down here what it means somewhere. I think it means not respecting God. Okay, we've all heard of Job, right? In James it says, "You have heard of Job's patience." Job is known for his patience. You say, "You have the patience of Job." What the heck happened with that? That's not the way it looks on my screen at home. Okay, anyway. So let's look at the impressive part of Job. Let's see what time it is. Okay. I'm not going to go through all the verses and talk about Job, but most of you know the story of Job, where he was a very rich guy. Satan and God are talking among themselves, and he says, "Hey, look at Job. He's a pretty good guy. He's always praising me. He's a good guy." And Satan says, "Well, if I take away all of his stuff, that's the only reason he's praising you right now, because he has all of his stuff. If I take all of it away, he won't." So God let him take all of his stuff. Took all of his possessions, his livestock and his children, were either stolen or killed. Everything gone. Like your whole bank account gone, your house gone, everything. All his possessions. In all this, it says in verse 22, Job did not sin. Right back. Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. Okay? This is where we get that whole patience thing. He did not sin, even on all that happened. So Satan went back to God and said, "Well, I think he will go against you if we take his health away." Right? So let's go to Job 2. Satan left God and struck Job with terrible sores. Job has ulcers and scabs from head to foot. They itched and oozed so badly that he took a piece of broken pottery to scrape himself. Then he went and sat on a trash heap among the ashes. But once again, not once through all this did Job sin. He said nothing against God. Okay? Pretty impressive show of patience, we would say. And then we jump ahead to the end of the story, which is the next one there, in the very last chapter, and it says, God blessed Job's later life even more than his earlier life. He ended up with 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 teams of oxen, and 1,000 donkeys. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. Job lived another 140 years, living to see his children and grandchildren, 4 generations of them. Then he died, an old man, a full life. All ends well for Job because he was patient. But was he patient? Let's look into this a little bit more. Next. The complaining begins. Oh, I'm sorry. Go back one. That was my fault. The complaining begins in chapter 3, right? Now, I didn't put all this stuff on the screen here. Let me read what Job was saying to his friends that had come to console him. Obliterate the day I was born. Blank out the night I was conceived. Let it be black hole in space. May God above forget it ever happened. Erase it from the books. May the day of my birth be buried in deep darkness, shrouded by the fog, swallowed by the night. In the night of my conception, the devil take it. Rip the date off the calendar. Delete it from the almanac. Oh, turn that night into pure nothingness. No sounds of pleasure from that night ever. May those who are good at cursing that day unleash the sea beast, Leviathan, on it. May its morning stars turn to black cinders, waiting for a daylight that never comes, never once seeing the first light of dawn. And why? Because it released me from my mother's womb into a life with so much trouble. That sounds like complaining to me. And we even go on into chapter 6, that's in the next one, where his friends were saying, you know, God will take care of you. Don't worry about it. And he says, what strength do I have that I should still hope? What prospects that I should be patient? He's even saying, I am not going to be patient anymore. He starts to complain. What's the result of this? Well, in chapter 40, God comes back on the scene and gives him a royal smackdown. Let me read some of the stuff that God, this is only a portion. Just like I just only read a portion of Job's complaint. There's like 40-some chapters in there, and most of that is Job and his friends talking about this whole situation, and Job's complaining pretty much in all of that. But in Job 40, this is some of God's reaction. God then confronted Job directly. Now, what do you have to say for yourself? Are you going to haul me, the mighty one, into court and press charges? Job answered, I'm speechless in awe. Words fail me. I should never have opened my mouth. I've talked too much, way too much. I'm ready to shut up and listen. God addressed Job next from the eye of the storm, and this is what he said. I have some more questions for you, and I want some straight answers. Do you presume to tell me what I'm doing wrong? Are you calling me a sinner so you may be a saint? Do you have an arm like my arm? Can you shout and thunder the way I can? Go ahead, show your stuff. Let's see what you're made of, what you can do. Unleash your outrage. Target the arrogant and lay them flat. Target the arrogant and bring them to their knees. Stop the wicked in their tracks. Make mincemeat of them. Dig a mass grave and dump them in it. Faceless corpses in an unmarked grave. I'll gladly step aside and hand things over to you. You can surely save yourself with no help from me. God's giving him the smackdown here. So I think a better way to interpret the words that we read that said about the patience of Job, patience, that word can also be translated as endurance. And I think maybe it's a little bit better of a translation to say that Job had endurance. He endured through all that, right? Not necessarily patient in all that, but he endured it. All right. Those were our examples of the impatient imp. I'm sure Sean will be impressed with my imp words there, as he so does every single time. Okay, so let's talk about the different types of patience. Three common types, and we're going to be coming back to this. Yeah, keep an eye on this here. Okay, we're going to come back to this later on, so let's just go through the three common types here. One is patience when facing a nuisance. Okay, what is a nuisance? You know, a person or a set of circumstances that really irritates you, but you'd love to complain about it, but it's so petty, it's so small. And you know that if you voice those grievances, that it would just cause things to go worse. You know what I'm talking about. I sit beside John every day. You know what I'm talking about, right? He's probably saying, I sit beside God every day. Yeah. But do you know, if you quietly endure those things, that you're actually being virtuous. That's part of being patient. When facing boredom is the next one. When things fall into a rut and you do the same thing all the time. You go to work, you get up, you go to work, and you come home, and you get the kids, and you have to feed the kids, and you do the homework, and then go to bed, and you get up and do it all over again, and just do it all the time. Boredom. Enduring that is showing some patience. And then the third one, suffering. When you are suffering in some way, or if you're aiding somebody that is suffering, that is also enduring patience. Now, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time with those three because we're going to come back around here later. So let's go on and talk about a different side of patience and where our patience is directed. Okay? So the first one is it's human directed. Our patience is directed at humans. Waiting your turn in line. Where was that? Waiting your turn in line. Have you ever been kind of like what Fatty McButterpants was talking about, waiting in a line, where you're behind somebody and they finally get, you know, I'm thinking like at a shopping at the Giant or something, and they put all their stuff on there and you know, the lady's bagging everything, and you know, this, you know, lady's watching her bag all this stuff, and then she says, okay, your bill is $87. Oh, okay, let me find my purse, you know, and let me, oh, I can't find anything in here ever, you know, and she pulls that stuff out, and oh, I got to find, where, I'm not gonna, if I should pay with credit card or with cash. Let me see if I have enough cash. No, I better pay with credit card. You know what I'm talking about. It drives you crazy. Have that stuff. As soon as I get in the line, I have my wallet out and my credit card in my hand ready to go. But that's just me. But that's the kind of human directedness, okay? We're waiting for a teenager to mature. How many of you are in that situation? And if you're not, you will learn some patience there. We're waiting for your spouse or kids to get ready. I've been down that road. It's been a while now. My kids used to drive me crazy. I am one of those guys. I'm very, very time oriented. I have to, if I am not 10 minutes early, I am late in my mind. I mean, timing and being on time is a very important thing. So that's one of the things that came to my mind when I was talking about human directedness, you know, waiting for people that are late. Okay, that's human directed. Now we also have patience when it's God directed. What kind of things are we talking about there? Maybe you're looking for a job. Maybe you're looking for a better job. And you're asking God for help. And you're waiting for that. You're waiting. You're having patience waiting for God on that. Maybe you're trying to find a mate. Maybe you are trying to conceive a child. Maybe you are waiting for a promise that God promised you in the Bible. He promised you, and you're waiting for that to be fulfilled. Maybe you're waiting for God to give you comfort during a trial. Maybe you need assurance of forgiveness for a sin that you've committed. All these things, you're waiting on God. You have, it's, your patience is God-directed. Then the final one is self-directed. I get impatient. We get impatient with ourselves for being so impatient with other people, right? Maybe you're impatient with yourself because you don't have self-control. Maybe you're trying to learn something and you can't quite grasp it. You're trying to learn to play the guitar. You're trying to learn algebra or whatever it is, and you can't quite get it, and you get impatient with yourself. That's what we're talking about, self-directed. But why is patience with others so difficult? Why is it so difficult? We're going to go into some... I'm going to teach you something you didn't know before. And I think if with knowledge, we can maybe get a hold of this whole impatient thing. So what's the condition? There's a condition out there known as egocentric predicament. Think about what that means. Egocentric predicament. Anybody know another word for that? Close. Yeah. Let's see what did I come up with. Selfishness, that's what we're talking about, right? We're talking about selfishness. Egocentric predicament. Let me read what the definition of egocentric predicament is. It's a natural human condition of being immediately aware only of one's own thoughts and feelings. Selfishness. That's a natural human condition. Our first thought is how it affects us, our own thoughts and feelings. I always had a problem with this word selfish. Things that end with ish, like, I don't know, she's tomboyish, or that's amateurish. That kind of means, you know, that ending with ish kind of means like somewhat or kind of. I don't think that applies here. I think selfishness should be actually called self-fullness, because we are full of self. We're not kind of into ourselves. We are full of self. So let's dig into this egocentric predicament here a little bit. It says, when we're standing in line or waiting in traffic, for example, all these people who are waiting are equally worthy to get what they are waiting for or to arrive at their destination. I know, however, only my own thoughts, and I am intimately aware of my own needs and desires. You can go back. Okay, so while you're waiting in that line, while you're waiting for your food, you are honed in on your own instincts, on your own desires. You're not thinking about, you know, while I'm waiting in that line for that person up there to make that left turn, while my radio is static, they have a right to go where they want to go, right? But in my mind, that's not what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about how it's affecting me. Okay, so that egocentric. We're going back to the, yeah, one more back. Yeah, there you go. Okay. So, egocentric predicament is you only know your own feelings and your own desires. The second reason why patience with others is so challenging is that none of us struggle with precisely the same temptation as other people do. Have you ever thought about that? Our particular strengths and weaknesses are not the same as those of others. One person is even-tempered and can't understand why her friend flies off the handle at times. But the person with the bad temper cannot understand how her even-keel friend can be habitually late to everything. And both of them get annoyed at a third friend's tendency to gossip. We all have strengths and weaknesses. And if we don't have that particular weakness, we get impatient with those that have that weakness. Then there's the third one of... Another aspect of the egocentric predicament is none of your friends knows what it's like to have the other's weakness. You can't comprehend how much effort it takes for the others who are exerting in order for them to be as moral as they are. For it's not immediately apparent how hard the others work to control themselves. Okay? Here's a good example of this. I have this condition, and I've had it for a long time, and I always thought it was something wrong. Well, it is something wrong with me. But it actually is scientifically proven now. My wife doesn't believe me, but it's called misophonia. Have you ever heard of that? See if this applies to you. It's called the hatred of sound. Some small studies show that people with misophonia generally have strong negative feelings, thoughts, and physical reactions to specific sounds, which the literature calls trigger sounds. These sounds are apparently usually soft, but can be loud. One study found that around 80% of the sounds were related to the mouth, eating, slurping, chewing, popping gum, whispering, and around 60% were repetitive. Reactions to the triggers can include aggression towards the origin of the sound, leaving, remaining in the presence, but suffering, trying to block it out or trying to mimic the sound. These are reactions to this. People with misophonia are aware they experience it, and some consider it abnormal. It is. The disruption is it causes it in their lives range from mild to severe. Avoidance and other behaviors can make it harder for people with this condition to achieve their goals and enjoy interpersonal interactions. I definitely fit into this category. My poor wife, everything she likes to eat is hard and makes a lot of crunching noises. And I've learned to have patience with that. Every time we go out with eat with people, I hear you chewing. And it drives me crazy. But that's just another example of, it's a weakness that I have that you may not know about. And you may get impatient with me if I stare at you like, how can you freaking eat ice? Something's wrong with people that eat ice. Sounds like you're eating boulders. But that's just me. Okay, now let's go on. Why is it difficult to have patience with God? Well, there we go. Okay, first one is, to have patience with God requires faith. Okay? Let's see, where, how come there's not a clock on here? I thought there used to be a clock on here. Okay. It involves faith. And whenever you, it says, patience with God involves faith, and to exercise faith is to surrender final control of one's life. To lack faith is to give in to one's desires for control. So you wanting control of your life is lacking faith. Okay? You have to give your life over. So our patience with God will only be as strong as our ability to overcome their desire and surrender every aspect of our lives. Right, these out of order. Uh-oh. Maybe missing a page. What's the next one? It's not clear. Oh, yeah, there it is. Sometimes we're waiting for God, and we're not clear what the answer is going to be, right? It's not clear whether it is God we're waiting for or we're waiting for us to do something. We're not sure whether we should be taking action or not. The unemployed person may wonder, have I waited too long rather than taking more action? The person desiring a spouse might second guess and say, have I taken the right social steps? Maybe I should be doing something more. The person, the people that... Our childless couple might wonder, should we pursue clinical help in order to conceive? Sometimes it's simply unclear whether God wants us to wait or take another course of action. So it's not clear. That's why, one of the reasons why it's difficult to have patience with God. Another one, is there no guarantees? There's no guarantees that what you're desiring, what you're waiting for is actually going to come. There's no guarantee that God will indeed act to satisfy our desires. Most situations that demand the patience aren't in regard to specific promises of God. Although He told us He will meet all of our needs, He hasn't guaranteed that all of our desires, even significant ones, will be satisfied. Is that the next one, guaranteed? Yeah. Ultimately, it comes down to what we just talked about. Self-fullness. Selfishness, self-fullness. How can we achieve more patience? Okay, it reveals itself in this, yep. I want patience and I want it now. How do we get there? See what I did there? That oxymoron. I want patience now. Okay. Here's what I found on the internet. Here's what the internet says about getting patience. Let's try these strategies. Take deep, slow breaths and count to 10. You probably heard that before. Impatience can cause you to tense your muscles involuntarily. That's not something that we can do. That's just something that I'm not sure where that came from. But okay, so untense your muscles. Learn to manage your emotions. Easier said than done. Force yourself to slow down. This is one that I have to always talk myself into. And proactive listening and empathetic listening to other people. Why are they? Maybe they're going to explain why they're going through what you're doing, why you're being impatient with them. There's a reason for it. Listen to them. And then the last one is gain patience with life. Here's a good sentence. I even wrote it down. Read it for you. Each nuisance, long wait, and affliction, every mosquito bite, traffic jam, and body ache in the life of the Christian raises her threshold of tolerance ever so much. Even tedious sermons and difficult reading, like now, can make you a more patient person. The older you get, have you ever noticed this? The older you get, kind of relax a little bit more. You kind of become more patient. At least I'm finding that out. I noticed that with my dad. You know, growing up with my dad, I am basically like my dad. And as the older he gets into that next generation of life, he's a lot more patient. And I think it just becomes, part of learning. So what can we learn from Jesus? Some of those are probably pretty good advice. What can we learn from Jesus? I mean, you got to remember, Jesus was dealing with disciples. if you remember any of those stories, he had to deal with things like, I can just imagine saying things like, you know, Jesus saying to the disciples, quit fighting over who sits at my right hand, or get behind me, Satan, or don't cut off his ear. You remember those stories? I mean, he has to deal with these immature disciples. And I can say he was probably getting, he would have been tempted to be impatient with them. So what's the first thing? Remember, we're going to go back to what we talked about before, the nuisance. Walking in other people's shoes. Let me read here what I wrote. He endured nuisance and annoyance from his disciples. No doubt, Jesus' patience with them was partly attributable to his empathetic understanding of their weakness. Jesus knew everyone perfectly, completely understanding each one's perspective. Knowing what it was like to be a disciple, as Jesus did, would certainly contribute to his remarkable patience. The lesson for us is that we should strive to imagine what it's like to be certain people. What it's like to walk around in their shoes. This will make us more patient. One of the things I did long, many years ago, I may have taken the personality type test. Now, there are a whole bunch of different ones out there, but DISC. DISC. Anyway, yeah, DISC. So DISC stands, there's four different personality types, and then you can have a combination of them, but there's a D, there's an I, there's an S, and a C. And I'm not going to take the time to go into what each one of those represents, but I'm a D. And what we found out on the elder board is Kirk's a D, Justin's a D, Sean's a D. These are guys that are driven. They like Sean has said many times up here that dealing with people is one of the hardest parts about being a pastor. It's one of the hardest parts about for me too is dealing with people. I'm more task oriented, not people oriented. I like to get things done, and if you're in my way, you're going to get run over because we're going to get it done. That's a D. An I is a person that likes to be up front and entertain people and the life of the party and you know people like that. I get irritated with I's. But once you know, like once you have some knowledge about different personality types and why they do the things that they do, that's the way they're wired, then you can have more patience because you can say, okay, they're an I. I understand they're a weird breed, but I understand that. It makes it easier for us to understand and to comprehend when we have a little bit more knowledge. So that DISC profile test, you can probably look it up online, but it's very interesting. You can learn a lot of stuff about different people. And I guarantee when you read what each one of those are, the D, the I, the S, the C. The S is the people that are very people-oriented. They like to have a lot of friends. They don't want to cause waves. You know, that's the S's. And then the C's are the people that are very exact. Everything has to be done in a certain way. Everything is in complete order. Sean is a DC, by the way, or a CD. I'm not sure which one of those, but I can understand that because I have a tendency to be that way. That's my personality too. But just having that kind of knowledge will help with your patience. Secondly, Jesus understood boredom. Let me read this. Although this is somewhat speculative, and it is, but think about it. I had never thought about this before. I think it's fair to assume that it was very tiresome for Jesus to work as a carpenter for many years before beginning his formal ministry. For over a decade, he didn't start till he was 30. So there was 30 years. For over a decade, the Son of God pounded nails into wood. Think about that if you feel overqualified for your job. The waiting might have been the hardest part, knowing his own mission as the Messiah, but not being able to declare his identity openly for so many years. Never really thought about that before. But there was a pretty large chunk of time that Jesus, the God of the world, who created the world, was a lowly carpenter because he was waiting for God's timing before he could come out. So that's how he dealt with boredom. And then thirdly, of course, we know, he suffered greatly. Jesus exhibited patience through severe affliction. He suffered intensely during the Passion, during the crucifixion, which we appropriately focus upon because it purchased our redemption. Countless other dramatic and yet severe frustrations surely dogged him. Jesus knew, for example, that given his messianic mission, he couldn't get married and have children. Now, this is, once again, this is kind of guessing, maybe. It doesn't really say anything about this in the Bible. But perhaps he knew that he wasn't going to be able to get married, but it says in the Bible that he had the same desires and temptations and everything that we did. I'm sure he found women attractive, but that was not his mission. So that's kind of other suffering, maybe, that we don't think about. We know that he suffered on the cross, but there were some other ways that he suffered. And then lastly, Jesus exhibited patience with his heavenly Father by talking to him. He waited for and worked toward the completion of his mission. Note that, like the psalmist, Jesus cried out in agony. Many verses where Jesus was crying out in agony to his Father, offering his righteous complaints and pleas to God, even quoting Scripture in the process. This was not impatience, but a heading off of the temptation to be impatient by talking directly to his heavenly Father. So it's not wrong to bring your concerns and talk directly with God. I'm not sure how this lesson went. I really struggled with it. I know I was talking with Kirk, and when you are given a word to teach on, as opposed to, here, teach on this section of verses or something like that, there's so many different ways you can go. It's almost endless. And to try to organize all your thoughts into something cohesive, I'm not sure how this all went. But let me end it with this. Patience, you cannot do patience on your own. Guaranteed. Because we have that egocentric predicament that I talked about. It's all inherent. That's in us. We will think about self first all the time. There's things we can do to work on it. But the number one thing is God has to provide that for us. Let's go to the next verse there. This is in Colossians. For this reason, since the day we heard about you, we have not stopped praying for you. We continually ask God to fill you with the knowledge of his will, through all the wisdom and understanding that the Spirit gives, so that you may live a life worthy of the Lord and please Him in every way, bearing fruit in every good work, growing in the knowledge of God, being strengthened with all power according to His glorious might, so that you may have great endurance and patience. God is the one that has to provide that patience. That's something that we can pray for. Be careful when you pray for patience, because he'll put you in certain circumstances where you're going to have to try it out. So, go ahead. You can go to the next one. So patience. These are the definitions that we were talking about. You know, wait without complaint, not quite good enough. Let's go to endure discomfort without complaint, a little bit better. The really tough one, able to accept or tolerate delays, problems, or suffering without becoming annoyed, anxious, or upset. We all fail at this, I guarantee. There's another definition that might be a little bit more appropriate. Let's look at that one. How about a God-given restraint in the face of opposition or oppression? God-given restraint. Being able to endure without complaint, without becoming annoyed, anxious, or upset. That can only come from God. That is not going to be inherent in us. Pretty good. So that's what I want you to leave with. You know, there's lots of stuff that we talked about, you know, different types of patience and human-driven and God-driven and self-driven and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to patience, we have to get that from God. And that's what it comes down to. Do I have one more slide here? So this is our motto for today. When the fruit of patience is produced, you will realize how selfish you are. As you become more patient, you're going to look back and realize how selfish you were. And that's what it all boils down to. So, hope we got something out of that. This was very good for me to go through this. I've always known I was impatient. That's just the way I'm wired, right? But there are things we can do to help us with that. So maybe that will help you. Let's close. Heavenly Father, we are talking about patience. You were talking to me about patience, not only today, but the last month or so. And the first thing I want to do is thank you for being so patient with us. You exhibit, you show us, you are the model for the patience that we are striving for. So help us to look towards you, realize that because you are so patient with us, that we can be patient with others. Just like when you forgive us, we can forgive others. When you love us, we can love others. When you are patient with us, we should be patient with others. Help us to see people walk in their shoes. Think what they are thinking to help us be patient. Help me to be patient as I am convinced myself that all these people are out here just to annoy me. That these are people that you love, that these people that have desires and needs and lives of their own, that they are trying to accomplish something, and just because it happens to interact with me, that's I should be more patient with that. So help us all to be more patient with each other. Help us to be more patient with you. Help us to be more patient with ourselves. Thank you for this morning, how everything went very smooth, and I just thank you for that. And just pray for a good week of showing you that we can be patient. In Jesus' name, amen.